This is TSFPN.com, the Sci-Fi Podcast Network, out of this world entertainment. It's Friday, the 15th of July. Welcome to Episode 8 of The Secrets. Welcome to this podcast of The Secrets, the podcast for anyone who is serious about writing. The Secrets home can be found at www.stormwolf.com. For the next 15 minutes, we'll talk about writing and how to get you even closer to seeing your name on the spine of a book. Hi, I'm Michael A. Stackpole, your host here on The Secrets. This is the audio version of my secret newsletter, which you can find at www.stormwolf.com. Right now, we're in the midst of doing a series on world building for those of you who are writing science fiction and fantasy. It'll help you get a start on how to put all these things together. Before we get started on the rules of writing for today, I'd like to thank everybody who sent me in postcards. That was very, very cool. Back in episode 6, I'd asked people to send postcards to Box 60333, Phoenix 85082-0333, just to let me know where you're listening from and if you've got any questions. So I hope to deal with some of those a little bit later. The other thing I'd like to point out is that I will be at Gen Con in Indianapolis in the tail end of August, and I'll be doing some writing seminars there. So if you're interested in looking into those, just go to www.gencon.com. Today's Rules of Writing, as longtime listeners know, the Rules of Writing was a series that ran in the early pages of the first year of The Secrets. And so I've been talking about these, and these are rules that'll help you get your writing career sort of jump-started. And today is a really big one. And the rule number eight for today is use all the senses. Contrary to popular belief, there are more than just five senses. And we all know about sight and hearing and touch and taste and smell. These are the basics. Most writers, when you think about it, tend to use vision and tend to use hearing almost exclusively. There are a variety of reasons for it, but basically it boils down to the fact that vision and hearing are what we use most often in life. Of those five senses, however, two others can be very, very powerful. The sense of touch, just being able to describe running your fingers along a rough brick wall, or feeling something that's very soft, really conveys a lot to us because we get a lot of information out of touch. And so this is something to use. It's also really, really effective when you're describing a scene in darkness where the characters can't see anything, but they can feel stuff. They can feel grit under their fingers. If you go out and concentrate a little bit on sense of feeling and how you can express that, you'll be adding a dimension to your writing that a lot of writers ignore. The sense of smell, and less so the sense of taste, but the sense of smell can be very powerful and can evoke lots and lots of memories. I remember when I was back in college and I was working in my dad's office, I had been dating a young lady who wore a particular perfume. I think it was Charlie. In any event, I was working in the file room, down in a corner of the file room, alphabetizing files, and I caught the scent of that perfume and immediately caught an image of her. I thought she may have come into the office just to say hi. It was close to lunchtime. And I turned around expecting to see this 18-year-old woman. And instead, what I saw was one of the nurses who worked for my dad, who was about 50, 55 years old, and not at all looking like the person I was expecting to see. But scent had evoked this one image, and then the shock was quite different. And we can use scent and taste really effectively in stories because you're forcing the reader to think about it, you're engaging the reader, and it's very, very evocative. Also on the other side, which is really cool, when they smell something that you've described later on, they'll remember that part of your story. So your story is going to keep coming back to them and stay with them. Those are the basic five senses, again, that we all sort of understand. The other ones are ones that you can use in fiction to great effect as long as you don't use them poorly. There is, of course, what we all refer to as the sixth sense. That sense of danger, that sense of unease, the prickling of the hairs on the back of your neck when something is wrong. This is a great sense to use. Don't overuse it. All too often, and we see this in television a lot, especially science fiction television, we have the empath who has feelings and tells us obvious things. The Klingons have just popped into the universe and fired a bunch of shots at the Enterprise, and the empath sits there and says, "Captain, I sense hostility." Duh. You know, so does everybody on the ship. So try not to use that, but you can use it as a creepy sense. When someone's going through and you want a suspenseful scene, they're feeling something weird, they wonder if the crosshairs of a rifle are being lined up on them, is someone sneaking up on them, you can use this very nicely to evoke a sense of suspense. The next sense that you have to play with is what I refer to as kinesthesia. It's sort of an outgrowth of the sense of touch. It's a sense of where your body is in space, in time, how you're moving. Where this sense is most effective is when people are falling. It probably comes from when we were primates growing up, and falling out of trees was probably one of the worst things you could possibly do, because you know, that would leave you prey to whatever was on the ground after you bounced a couple of times. And so that sense of losing control of yourself, not knowing where you are, falling, being disoriented, not knowing when you're going to land, this can be very, very effective. And so you can go ahead and use that. The last sense that I want to talk about here is common sense. Common sense is so underutilized in fiction. It's just horrible. All too often, authors will have characters do things because the author needs the character to do that thing to advance the story. And you can't do that. You've got to allow the characters to use common sense. If we look at horror movies, common sense dictates you are not the first person to go into the dark passageway, you are not the last person to go into the dark passageway, because you know both of those times you get killed. Or if you're in a teen slasher movie, don't have sex. It's only common sense. You have sex, you're going to die. You know, there's quite an allegory there for you. Allow your characters to have common sense. Don't make them stupid just to advance your story. If you allow them to be smart, both your protagonist and your antagonist, your story is going to get far more complicated, is going to be far richer, and is going to challenge the reader and challenge you as the writer a lot more, will seem natural, and will seem very good. So there it is, rule number 8, use all the senses. One great exercise you can do, by the way, is write a scene from the point of view of somebody who's blind, and just have to use all of those other senses. So it's something to play with, it's something to try, but again, use all the senses. Use more than vision, use more than hearing, and you'll add more dimensions than other authors do, and your writing will stand out because of it. Welcome back to the second segment here of The Secrets. I'm going to try and answer some questions today, and I've got a couple of interesting ones. First, over at Podcast Alley, someone who I hope voted, and I'd like all you to go over and vote for me at Podcast Alley, did leave a question in one of the comment areas, and that was, how do you copyright material? And he was saying that he's got about 3,000 poems and wanted to know how to get them all copyrighted all at once. Copyright is a really interesting situation. According to the International Convention, the Berne Convention, that the United States finally is a signatory to, if you write it, it is de facto copywritten. If you want to make sure that something is copywritten, just as I do here on these podcasts and I do on all the things that I put on the web, you include copyright, the date, and the name you want it copywritten in. So in this case, for this podcast, I will say at the end of it, this podcast is copyright 2005 Michael A. Stackpole. That constitutes copyright. It is not required under the law to go ahead and register with the Library of Congress, and the Library of Congress is kind of behind in the registrations anyway, just because of the sheer volume of stuff going out there. Because of the Berne Convention, your material is, again, de facto copywritten the second you set it down. So it's not necessary to go out and register stuff. There's an old saw that has said in the past that if you register the copyright, publishers won't like it, they may not take the story. Obviously, with the Berne Convention, that is now a moot point since everything is copywritten just off the bat. So your material will be done that. When it gets published, you will see the copyright notice will appear in your name. If it doesn't, if for some reason the magazine copyrights the thing in the name of the magazine, you simply will send them a letter and request reversion of copyright for your material back to you. But that's your property, and perhaps in a later show we can talk about some of the rights that you sell, or that's something I'll do in the newsletter later since it gets a little bit complicated. Second question I've got here is from Josh Ellis, who subscribes to the Secrets newsletter. And he says, I've just received my copy of Perchance to Dream and Other Stories from Amazon. That was an anthology I just had published. He says, the second story, The Krells of Tancrest Moor, struck me as a perfect example to use for a question I've had for some time. How do you decide which concepts and ideas that you come up with will be short stories, novellas, and novels? I found myself thinking that had I thought of this idea, I would have wanted to make it a full novel, possibly a two-volume series. The best reasons that I came up with for why you didn't use this idea for a full novel are these. A, you didn't care enough for the concept to spend so much time on it, or B, you didn't think the premise was strong enough to carry a full novel. Often I come up with ideas that I can't decide what to do with them in terms of length and depths. Well, Josh, this is an interesting question. The reason The Krells of Tancras Moor came out as a short story is because I worked from the title. That title just sounded good, and I slowly built the story from there, not really knowing what was going on. But I also viewed that story as the first in a set of two or three. And somewhere in a notebook here, I've got a couple of other titles set down and thoughts on what I would like to do with that. Do I think that that character in that situation is strong enough to carry a novel? Yeah, I probably do. And you know, I might pursue that at some point. Right now, because of the way publishing is, looking at doing a trilogy is far more lucrative than doing a one-off book. So that's why I have sort of stayed away from covering that. In a general sense, it's going to be the strength of the characters and the type of story you tell that'll tell what kind of delivery you've got. In this particular story, I only had a small thing to deal with, and this was an episode inside a much larger saga, as the rest of the trappings of the story point out. So that's why I did it as a short story. If I were to approach it as being longer, I would probably give you a longer run-up to that particular incident, and that incident would be one part of something that would move into other things. Roger Zelazny very wisely used to say, a short story is merely the last chapter of a novel that you haven't written yet. And so when you look at it that way, then anything is going to be there, or anything could become a novel or just be a short story. And what it'll depend upon, again, is the strength of the characters, how many characters you have, how large a canvas you have to use as a backdrop for the stories. If you look at early science fiction, you will see any number of novels that were expanded out of novellas. In terms of lengths of stories, I have a big problem. Most anthologies want stories from 3,000 to 6,000 words. I have a hard time keeping stories around 5,000 or 6,000 words. So for me, a story is likely to grow into a novella just because. I tend to use somewhat complex plots. I tend to natter on and drone on, or you know, put in too much stuff. And while it's possible to trim it out, a lot of that stuff, when I put material in, I try and link these things back and forth really tightly, so it makes them very difficult to cut. In essence, anytime you look at a property, think about all the different things you can do with it. Think about all the different places you could go with it, and then pick one of those projects and start playing. You may find that it grows, you may find that you had the wrong conception, but as you work with it, as you expand it, you're going to see more possibilities, you're going to see directions you can go, and all that sort of cool stuff. So don't allow yourself to get trapped by thinking this has got to be a novel or this has got to be a short story. These things are very, very mutable. Just let your creative mind go and you're going to be in great shape. Welcome back to our third segment. The weird word for today is flesh tailor, which is another expression for surgeon. Think about that. It works in all sorts of different things. And that comes from the Word Museum by Jeffrey K. Kirk, and we've used his material before. But flesh tailor, what a great and evocative kind of thing you can use. You can use it derogatorily. You can use it as a profession name. It's a very, very cool idea. I'd like to thank all of you who voted for me at Podcast Alley. This podcast, as always, is copyright 2005, Michael A. Stackpole. Please visit me at www.stormwolf.com. Look at the secrets, download some free issues. Good luck with your writing, and I will see you in another week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye. Plenty of people would love to write, but figuring out where to start isn't easy. The Secrets is a great place to begin. In this bi-weekly newsletter, Michael A. Stackpole and other writers share their experience. If you want to take your writing to the next level, whether you're just starting out or a seasoned veteran, The Secrets is a serious tool for your development. Visit www.stormwolf.com to learn more about The Secrets and download some sample issues. Your future awaits. Subscribe to The Secrets today.